Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and spirituality. And my guest today is Susan Dugan, A Course in Miracles teacher and the author of multiple articles and books and interviews, etc., based on forgiveness and living A Course in Miracles. And the basis of our discussion today, which has been suggested by Susan, is the workbook lesson 200, which is, there is no peace except the peace of God. So if you want to go grab your workbook, great. If you don't, that's okay too. You can just listen along. We will read some sections, I'm sure, and we will discuss it. So I do want to do a short introduction of Susan. Susan, as you know, has written several books, and I hope that you've had the opportunity to read at least one of those. I've got all three: The Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. And I always like to kind of give that intro that these are essays, and they always make me laugh. Susan has quite the sense of humor, or maybe our sense of humor is the same or something, because it always makes me laugh. And when I first got her book and I was laughing, I thought, is that an insult? Should I tell her that I think this stuff is really funny? You know, I wasn't sure what kind of feedback to give her. But those are wonderful books that you can find at Amazon.com, or Susan can tell us where else that you can find those. So, Susan, welcome, and thank you for the suggestion of this workbook lesson.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here, as always.
And, hey, are you working on any other books? I know that you were doing fiction for a while.
I've been very lapsed for quite a while on fiction, but although I just have started back again, I'm not really working on a book in particular, but short stories and that sort of thing. And then, you know, I'm not writing another Course in Miracles book at this point unless I decide to do another collection, because I have more, well over another book's, you know, book length manuscript of essays that from the last few years that I have never really tried to publish or anything. So at some point I might do something like that, but.
Yep.
Not at the moment.
Well, no pressure. Just wanted to know what was going on. And this is sort of an aside, but I went to an exhibit of Van Gogh yesterday. It's called The Immersion. And it is really interesting. It's not quite the same as actually going to a museum and seeing his paintings, but it was really wonderful. And you and I were talking, you know, before we started the show today, we were talking about just the way we try to manipulate the world. And, you know, it goes right into this, there's no peace except the peace of God, and relaxing and high blood pressure and all of that. Well, I'll tell you what, it is very relaxing sitting in there, because they play a lot of, well, not a lot of classical, but there's music and, of course, the pictures. And it is worthwhile just to kind of go in there and give yourself to the experience. I'm glad you're going to see it. It was fun. What I was thinking, though, is that in his life, I think they said that he did 2,100, so like over 2,000 paintings, and most of which were done in the last 2 years of his life. Mm. And when you think of that, Susan, it's like, oh my, you know, I started kind of dividing that up and saying, well, how many would he have to do per day in order to do that, you know?
That driven, right?
But of course there was a lot of mental illness and I don't know what it was, bipolar or manic, you know, whatever, but, you know, that many different, you know, portraits and landscapes and pictures that he painted in that short period of time.
Yeah. I mean, and there were a couple of movies a couple of years ago as well about him, and I can't remember the names exactly, but one of them was really felt like you were entering his world. You know, it was beautifully visually done, and it really chronicled the the last couple of years of his life. And, you know, that obsession to really, from his perspective of what he was seeing, which was, you know, it was terribly beautiful, but also sort of monstrous looking at times. And so, you know, I mean, I think actually that's a great example of kind of what we're going to be talking about today, is that, you know, we're trying in this world to somehow make sense of it, to make beauty out of something that, in form may be covered with beauty, but underneath, you know, reeks of guilt.
Yes.
And the belief that we are separate from God and can never really penetrate this facade back to the love, the love and peace in our mind that we believe we've destroyed in our selfishness of wanting to, you know, have this experiment in individuality and to think that we could create another world, another will, in opposition to our, our undifferentiated union with God, right? Which is within which all we are completely, all needs are met already. And we have all that we could have ever wanted. And so that, you know, the grief over that, that someone like Van Gogh or, we have extreme examples in the world of the madness that can cause. But on the other hand, it's that madness is within all of us. So some of us are just better actors at concealing, better able to conceal it and better able to deceive ourselves that we can somehow find it here. The more that the course's direction is really always to get us to back from the world, to step back from the world and look at its purpose, its cause, with Jesus, Holy Spirit, and to begin to recognize and admit that it's not bringing us the peace of God. And in fact, it's really in disguise often the cause of our suffering. The pleasures of this world are glitter and attract us, but it's the glitter of guilt, and we follow it into the world, thinking that we can somehow substitute for that lack that we feel, lack of love that we feel over believing that we separated from God, and somehow ease the guilt that is nagging within us, and it always fails. It nothing can ever fill that lack, and nothing can ever really, help us ease the guilt. We can try to see it, and we do try to see it in someone else, and try to distance ourselves from it. But it never really goes away. It just serves to nourish it and kind of keep that attack defense cycle of one or the other of the ego's thought system. The guilt is in you. Ken often talks about the seesaw, the child's game that we play of up and down. The guilt's in you. No, it's in you. It's up, and we're always struggling with that with everyone we are around, to prove that we really do exist apart from God. But it's not my fault. I'm the lesser. I'm the less guilty one here. It just leads to more suffering. And so at some point we ask for the better way. We recognize that this isn't working out so well, and we ask for the better way that the Course talks about, that Helen or the Bill famously in the story talked about, to asked Helen, said to Helen while they were in the midst of conflict, there has to be a better way, or another way of relating here, is what he was talking about. Relating to each other that's genuinely loved and loving, because nothing here is. And we have some recognition of that, and that's what brings us to the threshold of the spiritual journey, the threshold of the Course, if the Course is the right path for you. And still we fight the answer. The Course's answer is it's not here. Yes, there is the peace of God, there is peace for you, there is real love. And all are included in it, but it's not here in the world. And
right.
Of course, that's not an answer that we're liable to accept for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, putting Van Gogh back into this conversation, it almost seems like even the first paragraph of this lesson, seek you no further. You will not find peace except the peace of God. Accept the fact and save yourself the agony of yet more bitter disappointment, bleak despair, and a sensey, a sense of icy hopelessness and doubt. Seek right. no further. And what I'm thinking is, I mean, and you know, standing from the outside, there's no way I can say where Van Gogh was in this process, right. but he was a driven man, probably with mental illness, but a driven man who was not finding any happiness, died in abject poverty. With no fame, no recognition, which would appear to be something that was important to him and that he wanted. And now, I don't even know exactly what his lifespan was, but or his life, but like 100, 200 years later, millions of people are flocking to see his work. And when you think about the world and like the Emperor's New Clothes kind of analogy, we're so fickle as people. You know, and right. it's like we're always chasing after something that, you know, it is truly an illusion. So he's chasing after something that in some ways he died that he never even saw the fulfillment of. But even that would have not made him happy. But you just see the fickleness of this illusion.
Right.
You know, and that's it. So now millions of people. And I mean, I love art. I love going to art museums. Yeah. But you look at it and, it, you know, like, for example, here's another example. My sister has a painting on her wall that her grandson did when he was like 4 years old. And it's sort of just splattering. But she's got it framed and hung in her home. And people always ask where she got it. Like, that's a masterpiece. That's like incredible. And, you know, it's funky. This illusion just melds and changes and moves around. And so once again, when I look at that, I love those words of save yourself from the agony of yet more bitter disappointment, bleak despair, and icy hopelessness.
Right.
When are you going to figure out that anything in this world is so incredibly fleeting? When are you just going to wake up and smell the coffee?
Well, I mean, that's what we're asked to begin to look at, right? One opportunity at a time, you know, by using whatever is causing us, disturbing us at the moment, seems to be disturbing us at the moment in the dream of our lives, right? The dream of this world. You know, we're being asked again and again to raise the cause of my suffering to doubt, you know, to admit that lesson five, that, you know, maybe I'm not upset for the reason I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that we open our mind, that takes us back, makes us step back to the mind and away from our identification, at least a little bit with the body, because we've introduced the doubt, right? And
yes.
or the possibility, and really just the possibility of doubt. Maybe I'm wrong. And about what, you know, what suffering is and what's causing my suffering and what might solve it. And, you know, if we're willing to do that, then we're opening our mind. We've stepped back into the, maybe not the awareness, but the role of the decision-making mind that Ken tells us we are. We remind ourselves that we have another teacher. There's, you know, I have a part of my mind that doesn't agree with me here, you know, that sees this differently, that sees, that sees beyond in the dream and through the facade to the truth in all of us. You know, he knows it's a dream. He helps us remember that it's a dream. And that the peace of God is not here in the world. You know, there is peace for you, but it's in your mind and it's for everyone, including the one that, you know, including whoever I'm blaming for my suffering at the moment. You know, my special relationship, the situation I'm in, the health of my body, my financial situation, the state of the conflict in this world, the conflict of in our government. Whatever it is that we're attributing that lack of peace to. And so, you know, we all have the opportunity to do that. All we're doing is choosing between those two teachers. And when we are sharing the vision of that healed perception of Jesus, Holy Spirit in our mind, we have a different it shifts our experience. We have a peaceful experience. We recognize that, yeah, maybe this person is having an ego attack, or the situation, you know, is not the best, is very, very, you know, is hellish, is despairing. But what does that have to do with what I really am? You know, because we identify at least momentarily with what we really are, which is that presence and that loving presence in our mind that includes all parts of the decision-making mind, all frightened fragments. Mm-hmm. Of those, you know, all of us rushing around in madness trying to somehow make a more beautiful world. And, you know, this lesson, you know, and I think why I return to it so often is just that I can't be reminded enough that the answer isn't in manipulating the dream. And, you know, the answer is always and only with the teacher of love and peace in my mind. And when I'm identified, when I'm willing finally to, you know, it's kind of like that arm wrestling thing we did as kids to give up. stop fighting with Jesus on this point and say, okay, I give up. Maybe you're right and maybe I'm wrong. And mm-hmm. you know, each time I'm willing to do that, then I have a shift and have a knowing that the peace, that I've never left that peace, and that it does include, you know, no one's guilty here, and that the, you know, that this person or this situation that seems to be the problem is just part of, is the same as I am, is part of the ego thought system too, has an ego, just like me. And is frightened and, you know, terrified of being here, and, you know, is driven just like I am to try to differentiate itself as the less guilty one, and always losing the battle, just like I am, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what I personally find is, even when I can't quite get in touch with guilt, I can get in touch with being unhappy with the results.
Mm-hmm.
And that at least is getting me a step further, I think, because right. even if I can't quite get to the guilt part, I go, but you know what? I don't like this. And in fact, in Ken's commentary, when he's talking about this, you know, in the second paragraph of this lesson, it says, this is the final point to which each one of us has to come at last,
right.
you know, to lay aside the hope of happiness in the world. And Ken, when he's kind of rephrasing it, he's going, you don't have to explore every single option and path.
No.
You know, he goes, but that's what we tend to do. Okay, well, this didn't work. Maybe the next one's going to. There's got to be a next one. There will be another flavor, right. another spouse, another mate, another job, another home, another something that is going to be the successful one. And so when Ken says it, you know, you don't have to go down every path and exhaust every option. You can choose. You can get to that point and just go, yeah, I'm not gonna go down any of those paths anymore. They're all the same.
Right, right. And the more we practice, the more I think we practice this forgiveness in, you know, in the moment, as we find ourselves upset, right, and find ourselves which maybe we don't recognize that as guilt, but at least intellectually we know from the course that every time I'm upset,
yeah.
that's only one emotion.
Right.
You know. Here. And so it's always a reflection of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, by reminding ourselves of that again and again, and just being willing to practice this despite our resistance, even if we don't feel a shift, you know, just being patient with this process, patient with what the Course is telling us, patient, you know, having that little willingness to be wrong. And, you know, maybe I really am wrong about this. You know, we have times where we're not even, we find ourselves, you know, able to just say, you know, I don't think I have it in me to try this next.
To fight this one?
You know, and we kind of like the fight kind of starts to go out of us, you know, which is a good thing, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I know I've been there before. How many times do I want to deceive myself? You know,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't mean, you know, maybe it is something that we would like to pursue in the dream, But it's, can I do this with a different teacher so that I'm not putting my peace and the love of God on the line here like I do, like I have in the past?
Right.
You know, can I do this? And maybe the answer is yes, and maybe the answer is no. I mean, but if I can do it with that intention, and then catch myself when I find my, you know, if I find myself beginning to believe that it is the peace of God, to confuse it again, that it's really going to bring me what I ultimately, you know, my higher purpose of helping me awaken from the dream, well then, you know, I have to let it go again. Because, and not, you know, not, maybe not in form, but again, certainly in content. You know, this is not going to bring me the peace of God.
Right.
We all have to do something here. So it's, you know, we're not asked to like not do anything or not pursue a talent or you know, something that we enjoy. But we are asked to say, you know, what is it for? Am I going to use it as a classroom for forgiveness and healing my mind and awakening? Or am I going to use it to root myself more deeply in the dream and you know, use it for the purpose of attack and defense, of upholding the course's or the ego's thought system of one or the other, you know, to further the idea that I exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
That never brings me the peace of God.
Yeah, and you just touched upon, I think, one of the most important concepts in the course, purpose.
Yes.
What is the purpose of this? It's not whether or not we're in a relationship or whether or not we've got a great job or whatever it is. It's what is the purpose we're using it for?
That's right.
Every single thing, can we can change the purpose of what we're using it for. So, you know, because obviously I think a lot of people have difficulties with this too. Just getting, it's almost hard to imagine getting to that point of being peaceful no matter what is going on. Okay, so this is delicious, I'm peaceful. So this is not, I'm peaceful. You know, and not having a different response or reaction to something that we want to automatically judge as good or bad. I mean, you know, let's face it, I got the sword ready. This is good, this is bad, this is beautiful, this is ugly. And to just recognize that it does, even if I say this is beautiful, this is ugly, that it doesn't affect my peace of mind. It doesn't matter, ultimately.
Right. Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine getting to that point. I want to imagine getting to that point, but it's hard. It's hard to even imagine how to, you know, remain in a sense above the battleground. And I picture that more and more. Boy, when I'm ready to, you know, just like go ballistic, you know, I just go above the battleground, see what this feels like, try to do this, take a deep breath. What does this look like if you were looking at it as a picture? What does this look like if this was a script or a movie or a TV show? What would you do? I think I'd kill that person.
Right. Well, you know? We're asked to be watching that picture with Jesus. You know?
Yes.
So it's, what is Jesus seeing? What is my right mind seeing? And, you know, that's what it really, really helps us, is to just remind ourselves of that. You know, we're not asked to not have reactions.
Right.
That, you know, we're in school. We wouldn't need the course. If we didn't have, you know, if we weren't having reactions all the time. I mean, we believe we're a personal self. And that's what we need to, you know, that's what we're in school to unlearn. And so so our curriculum is really, we return to our curriculum again and again by the recognition that I'm upset. You know,
and I
seem to be upset over you know, this obstacle that's in my way, which is, whether it's a person or something with my body, or, you know, all those examples we were giving before, my finances, politics, you know, just the climate change, whatever it is, right?
Right.
And to just you know, recognize, okay, well, I'm not there yet. I need to go back to school. You know, I am in school. That's the purpose of my life. That's meaningful, that I'm giving it as a classroom. And I need to connect. And, you know, I need a conference with my teacher right now.
Right.
You know? I always think of when I early on, and I think I wrote about this in one of my books. But do you remember the Bewitched series? I'm really dating. But I used to love when she would call in Dr. Bombay, you know, who was the family, the warlock family physician, that when she had something wrong with her powers and so forth. But But I always, you know, early on in my course experience, I kind of pictured Jesus as this, just in a fanciful, funny way. I mean, I knew that that was, that he was not helping me with anything here, but, you know, calling him in like Dr. Bombay, you know.
Right.
Emergency, come right away, you know.
Yeah.
But it is that idea. I mean, really, actually, we're going to where he is, which is, as you said, above the battleground. And you know, we need a consultation. I need to be reminded of what's really happening here and what my purpose is, and that the healing of my mind is, and you know, through my accepting my only real function of true forgiveness, of learning what true forgiveness is, the forgiveness of what, of, you know, what never was, this difference, huge divide between us that we're imagining. You know, that's, I need to heal my mind about that. And that's all we're asked to do, you know, is just remember what our purpose is. And the more and more we do that, you know, as I think I was saying earlier, I do think that we will experience moments, and I've experienced moments where you just, you know, it's kind of like you just don't reach for that muscle of judgment anymore. You know, it just you can be peaceful in a situation that normally would have triggered you, your personal self, would have pushed one of your buttons, and find that all, you know, that you're hearing it only as a call for love, and you recognize it's the same call that you have, and it's, you know, you don't have to go any further with the ego attack, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become like we're integrating the role, the truth of us, the role of Jesus, Holy Spirit, the, you know, which represents our true identity as part of God, you know, we begin to sort of grow into that, as Jesus, as Ken says, and you know, sometimes we actually are able to kind of embody that for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so that's that gives us those little encouraging experiences that we don't always have to even really do the whole steps, because we, you know, we practice this so much that they begin to kind of replace, you know, heal parts of our minds that needed healing.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And I'm kind of laughing because I feel like over the last few weeks, of course, the astrologer in me wants to go, oh, this was going on, this was going on. But over the last few weeks, I felt like so many people have triggered me.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself even going, wow, why did you respond that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's almost like what it almost feels like is like I'm a bull or a sleeping giant, and all of a sudden this person is poking, and before I can always just kind of shoo them away or something like a fly, and all of a sudden it's like, you better get ready to run, I'm coming after you. And I'm just like, oh my God, you know, what is this?
Gulliver's Travels and CA lying down, tied up by the little, whatever they were called.
Yeah, and I mean, quite frankly, I did have one interaction with a complete stranger, but I mean, it's somebody that I have contracted with to do some work, and it's very expensive work, and somebody who I had not talked to at that business called me and was really being a bully. Let's just put it that way. Was really being a bully. And I just let her have it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, and I guess that's what I thought. I thought, you guys have pushed me and pushed me and pushed me for months, not coming through. And now they're trying to turn the tables and go, oh, well, you've got to do this right away.
Mm-hmm.
And after 4 months of they're going, we can't do it yet, we can't do it yet, we can't do it yet. And so, you know, and so then when I responded on the phone, I wanted to talk to somebody else that I'd been dealing with before, because obviously couldn't figure out where her stuff was coming from. She refused. And just kind of said, you have to deal with me. And so when she did that, boy, I'll tell you what, she pushed. And it almost, I wanted to say to her, I did not, but I wanted to say, you come at me with a sharp stick, you better be ready to run, honey. Because I'm going to grab it and I'm coming after you. Because, and that's it. I think she was just shocked when, after she kept bullying me, I finally just said, forget it. You know, just forget it. You know, I'm not moving, and I'm not doing what you want me to do, and I'm not moving on this. Mm. I don't care how much the contract is for. And I think she, you know, and I really do think, that probably she wasn't somebody who, maybe she doesn't have very good people skills, but I think she thought she could bully me and convince me to do something I didn't want to do. And she just had the wrong person or the wrong day or something. You know, instead of just coming at me and saying, hey, this is what would be beneficial to both of us, you know, could we do this? She just basically laid down the law and said, you're going to do this or we're going to take your money.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, you're not, sweetheart. And I think she was shocked. You know, I think she literally, because in fact, one thing that I thought was so funny is when I pushed back and basically said, no, you're not. And if you try it, I'll take you to court, is what I said, which is a riot because I've never taken anybody to court. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she then kept going, I'm a nice person. I'm a nice person. And yeah. I'm like, what? You know, who says that? And so it was kind of funny because I said, well, you know what? Nice people act nice. They don't tell people they're nice.
Yeah.
So, but anyway. Well,
how did you feel after all of this?
Oh, I felt incredibly angry. Incredibly angry. And also, I'm not going to say embarrassed because, like I said, I think she was a bully and I think I stood up to her. So I felt like I don't have anything to be embarrassed about in terms of, I'm not sure how I could have handled it differently. But it was also very upsetting that I let her, that I got that upset.
Sure.
And it did feel like I went from 0 to 60
mm-hmm.
in a seconds. But then again, when I thought about it, I thought, but see, this has been going on for 4 or 5 months where they were supposed to be doing this work
mm-hmm.
and didn't.
Right.
And so it really was like the ball or the sleeping giant or something. It's like every time you've delayed, I've said, okay, okay, okay. And now you're going to call me and push me?
Right.
You know, so I think that part of it was that, is that I had let some things go over and over and over instead of dealing with them.
Right.
And so then, you know, I was ready to blow anyway.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I felt very angry and then I felt very upset that I was so out of control.
Right.
That's
right.
How I felt. I mean, it felt very like, you know, talk about Jesus SOS. It's like, right. Oh my God, could I have been any more hateful? You know?
Right. And that's what, there's the pain of it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, certain, we're not asked to, you know, not to, to trust our brothers and sisters' egos.
Yeah, right.
You know, we're not asked to take responsibility for their miscreations or anything like that. But we are asked to take responsibility for our anger.
Yes.
You know? I mean, it's not saying that we don't get angry, but it is saying it's never justified by all the reasons
no.
that we give, you know, that are in the, once again, that are in the world.
Right.
When we created a world in which there is no peace, you know.
Right.
So if we're enraged and about engaging with the world and the ego, then, you know, ultimately the course's answer is that we have to take back the responsibility for that to the mind. I mean, that's because that's the only place where peace is.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do, when we are finally willing to do that, you know, that pain that comes up that you're talking about afterwards, and we feel embarrassed and we feel like we lost it and, you know, we often judge ourselves. And that's not necessary, but it is necessary to just see that it still is, you know, what is my purpose again? You
yes.
know, it's the purpose to get, you know, deeper in the dream in which nobody ever wins, you know?
Yeah.
That's the problem. I mean, nobody ever wins. Like, yeah, maybe you won that battle, but there's another coming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and really the only way that we win is to get out of the dualistic thought system itself. And you know, join with that healed perception again in our mind, in which at some point, if we really are, at, you know, using it and willing to kind of look at it with Jesus afterwards, often very much it's still afterwards, we have to kind of back up, right, after we've already gone there. But to just say, you know, not to judge ourselves, but let me use this for healing, you know. Help me to see what I need to see here, which is that the other person is fighting the same hard battle of believing that they need to fight to the death for it to be right, just like I do.
Yes.
You know? And it's coming from the same place, even though it as misguided as it may be, I'm misguided too very often. You know, very often I'm blinded by completely by my whatever is in the forefront of my neediness to fill the lack that I feel. And I, you know, I notice that often in with my relationship with my husband, where I don't see him. I'm blinded to his needs. I just see what I need him to do, or what he hasn't done, or what he, you know, what will make me feel more peaceful. That I, you know, I believe that he can change, and that's not true.
Right, and you know, you're talking about, and once again, shared interests,
right,
versus individual interests.
Right.
And you know, of course, I love to think that I'm always into shared interests, and I know that's not true.
No, there's no shared interest between bodies, CA, ever.
No, there isn't, and yet, I will admit, I mean, in some kind of an illusion, that's kind of what I thought we were doing, this company, right. You know, this company this summer, because they'd say, we need this, and can you, we do this, you know, timing-wise? And I'm like, okay, I understand. You have a bigger job, and you need to do this. And so I felt like we were always talking it out and coming up with decisions. So when she just, you know, came up with a decision and said, this is what we need as a company, she didn't care what I wanted. I guess right. That was such an affront, because they at least pretended before to be into shared interests, you know?
Right.
But I mean, and I think that's a thing too. I recognize, I mean, when I really could back off of it, like I said, they needed something, you know, they needed, they now don't have enough jobs. So they need my job.
Right.
And now it's not good timing for me. And so they're mad, or, you know, she was going to push me into a slot, even though they had given me another date. So I recognize that, you know, I think she just thought she could call up and kind of scare me in that we're going to keep your money if you don't do this, instead of just saying, hey, we're really low on jobs right now. Is there any way we can move you? You know?
Right.
And so I think that's it too. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't think she's a bad person. I think she just miscalculated, you know, the way she was handling the situation. And I certainly did. But yeah, you're right. It's and anger is definitely my thing. I recognize that. I don't, you know, and I think with a lot of people, it probably is, but for me, it's obvious. It's like, I know that anger is kind of my whatever, you know, ball and chain.
Well, we all, I mean, I think anger is anger's within us all. We're all furious that we at ourselves. That's that self-loathing that is really at the root of that. You know, we're furious that we did this to ourselves.
Yes.
And we're furious that we keep doing it and that we can't seem to get out of it. You know, but there it is again, you know, my whoever's in, I'm interacting with at any given time that's causing that anger to bubble up, that, you know, that's my standard for God. You know, why couldn't I have it my way? Why couldn't you recognize that, you know, and grant me favor to have this separate world exist and bless me here, you know?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you know, and so we're all furious and we're so, you know, again, I love lesson 182 because it really brings me back to compassion for myself and others, because it's just that, you know, everybody's fighting that same hard battle. Everybody is that poor little child that is so confused and thinks that he's damned himself to this, you know, feels an alien in this world. And, you know, doesn't feel like he can ever find his way home and is lost and can't get his needs met and thinks he's damned here for all eternity, lost in this world, you know, and we're all like that. And, you know, people, I mean, that's why people act out so much. That's why I act out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're always like in competition for peace.
Right. Now, listen, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to read just one of the paragraphs here that talks a little bit about that idea of lesson 182, and it's paragraph 4, where he says, come home, to the mind, right? Come back to the mind with me. You have not found your happiness in foreign places and in alien forms that have no meaning to you, though you sought to make them meaningful, this world is not where you belong. You are a stranger here. But it is given you to find the means whereby the world no longer seems to be a prison house or jail for anyone.
And by the way, lesson 182, for those who are listening, is, I will be still an instant and go home.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you're right, just a wonderful, wonderful lesson.
It's wonderful. It's a very beautiful lesson. But, you know, we have that shift when we're finally willing to look at it. And you know, it's our pain that brings us to being willing to look, you know. So we don't, so even though those experiences like you're describing are pretty, you know, are painful and so disturbing, that it is what brings us, you know, back to the course, because there's no answer for that in the world.
Yes. And in fact, in the last paragraph of this lesson, the one 200, mm-hmm. I was thinking about it because, and I'll read it in a second, I always do feel such like I'm schizophrenic. I mean, I would say that in terms of A Course in Miracles. I always feel like, how do we live between these two worlds? How do we do this? How do we close the gap? How do we, like you say, we're not going to just sit and twiddle our thumbs and go, well, I'm A Course in Miracles student, I don't have to do anything. You know, that's not what it's about. But having that change of mind, that shift in perception, and I feel like constantly, you know, even sometimes in conversations with people, I feel like I'm being false, because they're talking about all these magic things, you know, magic, how to cure blood pressure, how to cure this, how to, you know, and it's like, I want to participate. And of course I do those things. Some of those things are really fun, like, you know, anti-aging things, or use this cream and you'll look more beautiful or whatever. But there's also part of me that goes, we're just putting makeup on the, you know, on the corpse, you know, we're just like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. And so when I got to this paragraph, if I thought about it, it says, today we seek no idols. Peace cannot be found in them. The peace of God is ours, and only this will we accept and want. Peace be to us today, for we have found a simple, happy way to leave the world of ambiguity and to replace our shifting goals and solitary dreams with single purpose and companionship. And I'll tell you, I thought, man, I need to write that out, because when it says replace our shifting goals and solitary dreams, because boy, isn't that what it is? It's like always shift. This didn't work, I'm going to try this. This didn't work, I'm going to try this. It's always the shifting goals, but we always feel so lonely. The solitary dreams, but we can replace it with a single purpose and companionship.
And real companionship of our
sisters.
Yes. 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 That's right. And I mean, that's the answer to everything. And how do we close that gap? Practice. We practice and we practice and we practice and try to do that every time we become upset. Every time we become angry. As consistently as we possibly can, and forgive ourselves our resistance to doing it. That's how we do it.
Yeah.
You close the gap, and, you know, and ask for help. And you know, when we become impatient with the journey, you know, to remember that Jesus says that he's so close to us, we cannot fail. You know, to trust that the process that has led you this far, Ken had said in one of the interviews that I did with him, trust that the process that has led you this far will not fail you now. And when you're frustrated with the course, when you wish that you were at the top of the ladder, when you wonder, how do you get there?
Yeah, when you feel like you've fallen off and you're splat back on the ground.
Right. To just be gentle and patient, and you know, recognize that, you know, the kind use of time is to practice forgiveness. The only meaningful use of this crazy life I have, this solitary confinement that, you know, you just read about, the solitary dreams. Mm-hmm. My solitary dream is the freedom, you know, that I'm learn is freeing myself through this willingness to keep practicing forgiveness, the course's forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Not upset for the reason I think I could see peace instead of this, and I'm not alone, and, you know, I want to see differently.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this is kind of interesting too. It just all of a sudden occurred to me. I saw part of a movie last night that was called Man of Steel. And I love anything having to do with Superman. And this one I don't think I'd seen before. And man, it's a real different take. But the point is, you know, they do all this stuff with Krypton about how babies are not being born naturally, but babies are literally being farmed, kind of like in the Matrix. Mm-hmm. They're being farmed, and they only have one purpose. And so the bad guy, or whatever you want to call him, the villain, you know, to the hero, at the end of it, I mean, he it's like he cannot do anything but destroy and kill. Mm. And he's on Earth because they basically, I mean, his idea is, you know, Krypton was lost, and so he wants to turn Earth into another Krypton. And, but the point is, he says, I mean, after he's done all these horrible things, he's willing to kill all the billions of people on Earth so that Krypton can have a new home. And no, nothing stops him. But then he said something, and he goes, my purpose, my only purpose was to protect the people of Krypton. Wow. And all of a sudden that just kind of occurred to me. It's like, that's my only purpose. He didn't have a right mind. He didn't have the option of changing and going, yeah, maybe there's a different way to do this. Maybe Earth will let us share this planet, you know? And when he said that, my purpose at birth was to protect Krypton and the inhabitants of Krypton. That's my only purpose. And unlike Superman, who had been sent to Earth, who now had a choice. See, he was, and by the way, he was the first baby born in generations, according to this movie, who was born naturally. So he could change his mind. He could change his purpose. And right. But I thought that was really striking at the end in very Course in Miracles, where he goes, I, you know, he didn't say I don't have a choice, but he just goes, this is my only purpose, and I have to die making it happen. Mm. You know, I can't change my mind. And, you know, how often do we get feeling like that? Like, we're in these solitary dreams of, I can't change my mind. And you know what? We can.
Right, right. It's not true. It's a lie. And, you know, the Course is helping us uncover that lie.
Yeah.
Not a victim of the world I see, not ever.
No. Or of my childhood, or my purpose at birth, or whatever it is, I can change my mind.
Yep.
Yeah, I can shift. I can find this simple, happy way to leave the world of ambiguity and replace my shifting goals and solitary dreams with a single purpose and companionship.
Right, right.
Do you think? Can we do it? Can we do it, Susan?
Well, there is no peace except the peace of God, and I am glad and thankful it is so, is the way this lesson, the prayer that this lesson offers at the end. And, you know, I mean, when we are willing to make that shift back to the mind and join with that peace, then we are thankful, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's when we're thankful for a peace that is not of this world. And that we are happily wrong.
Yes. Well, and you know, I know this is an aside and we're getting close to the end of our time, but I just have to mention this to you as a writer, because I tend to use notes. And like, for instance, I will pull up old notes from a show that we've done before, and then I will just change some of the stuff so that I kind of have the format. And this just appears on a show, obviously, that we did a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I know that I had pulled this out of something that Ken wrote. And every once in a while, Ken uses a word that I truly don't recognize at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this word, I can honestly say I don't know I'd ever heard it in my life. I don't know how to say it, but it's E-V-A-N. E-S-C-E.
Evanescent.
And so I literally...
Evanescent?
I guess, but then when I looked it up, it said to pass out of sight, memory, or existence. And now I wish I remembered why I had written that, but it obviously had something to do with one of the conversations we had and something we were referring to of Kent's. But, you know, I love that idea, and yet it's also kind of scary because it's the idea that that's it. Once you're transformed, or once you really shift your mind, it's like all this other stuff does just pass out of sight, memory, or existence somehow. It just loses its importance.
Goes back into the nothingness from which it sprang, the Course says, right?
Yes. But I don't remember where I got that word. Something out of Ken's.
That's great. Yeah.
Do you know how to say it?
Love it.
Evaness?
Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with it except for evanescence. But
well, maybe now you'll see it in something Ken has written.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, every once in a while I go, you can tell he's a scholar because it's like, what? What is that word?
It's a great word for the day.
Yeah. Well, it's Evanesce.
C-E, okay.
And he used it, you know, about how, you know, we, in a sense, we will be lifted up, and the pain and the happiness and the sorrow, whatever, is just like it's not even a distant memory. It's just, it passes out of sight.
Right.
Well, anyway, it just happened to be here at the end of my notes.
If that creates fear at all, you know, along the way, I mean, we're not... The holy instant is a moment where we have that experience along the journey, right?
Uh-huh.
Where it does pass away in that moment. We share the vision of Jesus, Holy Spirit. That vision is the term that's used to describe that. And we are completely, you know, all guilt is gone, right? We're no longer at all identified with the personal self or the dream. And we know that everybody is included in that. We have that sense of a taste of our true, of healed perception. But we're not asked to stay there until, you know, I mean, more and more that will, through this practice, replace eventually our attraction to anything other than that. But we're not, you know, the Course reassures us that we're not going to FNS out of here.
No. Well, and you know, now that I've seen that again, I'm sure it's going to appear in something. I mean, I'll probably realize what book it was in. It was probably in The Journey Home is what I'm thinking. But I just don't remember. Maybe it was in one of his little books.
Right, could be.
Yeah, so in any case, Susan, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
Me today. And thank you also for the suggestion of this particular lesson. I really appreciate it.
It's a great lesson. And I encourage people to read through the entirety of it. There's so much great, we missed one of the really good paragraphs here too, so.
Which paragraph is that?
I was thinking of paragraph 5.
You want to read it really quick in 1 minute?
Sure. Freedom is given you where you beheld but chains and iron doors, but you must change your mind about the purpose of the world if you would find escape. You will be bound till all the world is seen by you as blessed and everyone made free of your mistakes and honored as he is. You made him not, so you made him up not, no more yourself. And as you free the one, the other is accepted as he is. And
that's
really
nice.
The Course's formula. You know, it's all about changing your mind about the purpose of the world. And the purpose of the world is to uphold the ego thought system that separation is real and punishment is deserved.
That's
Do I
right.
want that?
That's
yeah.
right. What's your purpose, people?
Right.
Okay, well, Susan, do you have any announcements that you'd like to make before we go today?
Not really. No, I don't think so. Just, you know, the foundation is still... For A Course in Miracles is still doing, Jeff Siebert is still doing, you know, all kinds of seminars and podcasts that are available there that can be streamed, and there's classes that people can get in on and through streaming if they go to the website. So I always like to encourage people to do that. I've had such a crazy last few months that I haven't really had time to do that myself, but it's a reminder to me too.
Okay, and that website is the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, facim.org. And also you can find Susan at her website, forayesinforgiveness.com. And forays is forays, and that's in forgiveness. So Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Sia. It's always a pleasure.
Same here, ditto. And it's also a pleasure to have everybody participating or listening to us today. Thank you so much for just being with us in spirit. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest Susan Dugan on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and spirituality. ¶¶